Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, what we've done so far, let's just bring this up to date, and then we have lots of handouts for today. What we've done so far is gone through the text of the verses. I have them here. If you'd like to take a look at those, you can pass those around. This is what we've been working with over the last two or three sessions. This sheet in front of you right now is simply the text. This is just the words of the verses which we have gone through. We broke down this first episode. Again, we're going to be doing three whole episodes of Yaakov and Esav. This is episode number one, and we've broken episode number one down into its two components. The first component, part one, is the actual birth of Yaakov and Esav, how we describe the beginnings of the stories of Yitzchak marrying Rivka, and then they have this very difficult labor, which is a 20-year waiting period in order to have the pregnancy. She eventually gets pregnant, Rivka does. Children agitate. She asks God, what's going to be? She gets this four-part prophecy, which we're not going to go through in depth today. The two nations being separated from her womb. The younger will eventually be served by the older. And then they are born, the first one being red and hairy, named Esav, and the second one, Yaakov, holding on to the heel. That was part one. Part two, very briefly again, the boys now grow up. Esav becomes a man of the field. Yaakov becomes a man of the tent. Yitzchak loves Yaakov. Rivka loves Esav. And then we have the last couple verses, which is the actual sale, in which Esav comes in from the field and he's starving. And Yaakov says, sell me your birthright. Esav says, what do I need this for? I'm going to die anyway. Swear to me. He swears. He gives him a bowl of soup. He gives him some bread. Sells him the birthright. Esav eats, drinks, gets up, leaves, and then he despises the birthright. That's in 10 seconds, the two parts and the verses which we've done. So, that's what we did. Now we're going to begin working through the commentators and an understanding, a deeper understanding of this. What we're going to do, I'm going to take a risk, a calculated risk, but a risk nonetheless. What we've done in the past, when we would do this, is that we would go through the entire story with a commentary of Rashi. Then we go through the entire story with a commentary of the Ramban. Then we go through the entire story with a commentary of Rav Hirsch. And it was each one was wonderful, and each what they each contributed. What I have found is that by the time we finish, especially that this is going to be a lengthier story, by the time we get to the end of one commentary and start the other, it's going to be totally lost what each one said about any particular verse. So I'm going to try something. Well, we've done, I have all three commentaries in front of me now, color coordinated, so that we can pay attention to what we're doing at each particular time. We're going to try an experiment, and what we're going to do is we're going to go through it verse by verse. Sometimes we'll do two verses at a time, most of them we'll do verse by verse. All three of the commentaries together on each verse. And then through that, we'll work our way through the entire story. And we'll see if this works better or the same, or you're all indifferent to the two different approaches. Yeah. So what I have here are the three sheets, and I've, again, as I said, you'll see them. So pass them around. The longer sheets in white are Rashi. I labeled each one on the cover also. So not only is it color coordinated, but it is labeled very clearly as well. So everybody can make sure that you have both a copy of Rashi and of the blue Rambans. And of the yellow, Rav Hirsch. There is no meaning behind the colors chosen. Do not look into it. Do not try to determine what significance I have given to them. There is none.
Are you sure?
Positive. The thickest packet is the Ramban, just because he has the most to say in this particular episode. And we will go through it all. Okay, here's the yellow Rav Hirsch. I'm happy to collect these at the end of every class, and we'll keep them here. If you want to keep them on your own, that's also totally fine. Okay, everybody good? So far, so good. I haven't lost it yet. First 5 minutes. We're good. Okay, here we go. Okay, so we're going to start with Rashi on the first verse. Let's go back over the first verse, or the first two verses, if you will, as we'll see them both today, God willing, and go over the questions that we had as we go through these verses, and then we'll go through, now we'll see some of the answers from the commentator. So I'm just still on the text only. At this point, You can either keep these sheets with the text, or you can put them aside, because all the three verses, all three of the copies that I gave you also have the text of the psukim in them as well. So, but if you feel more comfortable working off of the original sheet, just to, if that helps give you a sense as to where you are, that's good. Whatever works for you. Okay, verse 19. Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avraham. These are the generations or the offspring of Yitzchak, who is the son of Avraham. Avraham holid es Yitzchak. Avraham begot Yitzchak. And what was the one or major question that we have? There are really two questions on this verse.
Why is he mentioned twice?
Okay, excellent. Why is he mentioned twice? Right? In other words, we know these are the generations of Yitzchak ben Avraham. So that's in itself a little bit of a question. Because we already know the story of Yitzchak is the son of Avraham. That's been spoken about at length already in the prior chapters. But leaving that aside even, these are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. What's clearly repetitive is then the verse concludes with, why does the verse conclude with Avraham holid es Yitzchak, that Avraham begot Yitzchak? That's obvious. You just told me that Yitzchak is the son of Avraham. That's an obvious question number one. Question number two, which is not as obvious from the text itself, from the pasuk, but becomes obvious as you begin to read the Chumash. If I were to have stopped after the first phrase, Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avraham, these are the offspring of the generations of Yitzchak ben Avraham, what should have followed?
The names of the children.
Who are the children? Ela told us Noach, right? The next verse says Shem, Cham, and Yafes. These are his sons. There also we have a question. It says Noach Ish Tzadik, that we, before we get right into his sons, we describe a little bit on. But that phrase of these are the generations of is repeated many, many, many times in the Chumash, and it's always an introduction to their children. What do we actually find here? Now again, this is not an inherent in the pasuk itself. You have to actually read a few verses before you go back and say, hey, wait a minute, we're missing something. Because the opening phrase was, these are the generations of Yitzchak. But it's not so soon that we actually introduce Yaakov and Esav. We then discuss Yitzchak marrying Rivka. We discuss her barrenness and the prayers. And then she finally conceives, but the conception, not so smooth, we have a problem, she goes to ask God, she gets a prophecy, and then, six verses later, finally we're introduced to the actual children of Yaakov and Esau. So we have a break between Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avraham, these are the generation of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham, and more than that, really, we have the repetition of an Avraham begot Yitzchak, Avraham holidus Yitzchak. We know that, you just told me that, why does it have to repeat that again? So let's take a look at what our commentators have to say. Let's take a look at Rashi first. Rashi is your long white sheets. So Rashi in his first comment, again, if those are not familiar yet with the structure of the Art Scroll English, which I've photocopied in front of you, the top of the page are the actual psukim, and then we have the Rashi text, and then we have the Rashi elucidated, which is where we will be hanging out, reading it in that section. It's a little bit tricky because the book was printed as a Hebrew book, which means that it's running from right to left, even though we're generally reading the English side, which means that if you'll see the right-hand side of your page, if you look through the staple, is really page 272, and the left-hand side of your page is 273. So we're going to be moving in a little bit of a confusing manner, and then we're going to be flipping the page like a Hebrew book to 274 on the back side, but we'll work that through as best we can as we go along. Here we go. Says Rashi in his first comment, Ela told us, Yitzchak, these are the offspring of Isaac, Jacob and Esav, Yaakov and Esav, who are spoken of further on in the passage. Meaning Rashi is answering a question which you just asked. These are the offspring of Yitzchak, but what's missing? Who they are. It's not spoken. We're not told who they are. So Rashi says, don't be bothered. They're going to come later, but indeed they are the source of what it is that we're talking about, the offspring. We're all working towards the introduction of Yaakov and Esav, and you need to know that all of this is going to be part of their story. We're not just going to list that the children of Yitzchak are Yaakov and Esav, but that there's a story behind their birth, and this, so we introduce that there are going to be these children, and then there's going to be the story behind it that is coming up now. Now, we'll leave it at that as far as Rashi comments goes. The second major question on the verse was the repetition of the second phrase, that Avraham begot Yitzchak, which is obvious because you just told me that Yitzchak was the son of Avraham. We're going to find four approaches between Rashi and the Ramban. They're going to quote four approaches as to what do we learn from the fact that the Torah repeats that Avraham begat Yitzchak. Let's start with Rashi. Rashi says on the second paragraph, Avraham begat Yitzchak, after the Holy One, blessed is He, named him Avraham, after that he begat Yitzchak. Meaning, what's it saying? Avraham, holy es Yitzchak. We know that Avraham has a child. When does he have this child? He lives the bulk of his life called Avram, without a hey. It's only later in life that his name is changed to the hey. Avraham, you will be the father of a multitude of nations. So says Rashi, you know why the Torah stresses after just told me that Yitzchak was the son of Avram, Avraham begat Yitzchak? It's saying Avraham, the stress is on, it was only after the name, after God blessed him and said, your name will no longer be called Avram, but Avraham, you now take your place as the father of the multitude of all nations, and it's in that role that you have the son Yitzchak, who's going to be the son of the primary nation, the Jewish nation, who's going to bring my name to the world. But you only have that son after you take your place as the father of the multitude of nations. Avraham, holy. It's always, where do you put the stress? Avraham, or Avraham, we know that already. No, Avraham, you need to know when the birth takes place chronologically, and the Torah is stressing the significance of that fact as to only after his name is changed is he actually, is he then called Avraham? Does he give birth to
Yitzchak? Ishmael is already born before he's called Avraham, and a Sarah sent away, I don't have the pages before.
Yishmael is born before that. Okay, that's interpretation number one, to stress when Yitzchak was born. Says Rashi, interpretation number two, alternatively, Dover Acher. Now here Rashi is going to quote a Medrash, for those of you who were here last night at our class. Here's where you're going to see where Chazal fill in the stories of the Chumash with non-halachic interpretation. Says Rashi, listen to this one. Since the verse wrote, Yitzchak, who is already the son of Avraham, why does it still say Avraham gave birth or begat Yitzchak? For the Leitzanei Hador, the scoffers of the generation, were saying that Sarah had become pregnant from Avimelech. The story immediately prior to this, in the Chumash, we started with Parshas Toldos. At the end of the prior Parsha, it's really what we read last week, Chai Sarah, really, the prior Parsha was Chai Sarah, Sarah's death, and Avram finding a wife. But right before that, Avram goes down to the land of Gerar, and Sarah is taken captive by the king of the Plishtim, by Avimelech. And he abducts her, and a plague breaks out in his palace. He discovers that when Avram and Sarah said that they were brother and sisters, that it really wasn't true, and he sends them back home. But the scoffers of the generation said, look at this, isn't that interesting? Avram and Sarah live as husband and wife for 90 years. No children. She's abducted by Avimelech, and lo and behold, immediately after that, she becomes pregnant. So the scoffers of the generation said, look, it's miraculous that Sarah had a child, but it wasn't with Avraham. This is Avimelech's child. Says Rashi, for she spent many, why were the scoffers of the generation saying that Yitzchak was really the child of Avimelech? They had good reason to say so, because she spent many years with Avram as his wife, and yet she did not become pregnant from him. So Me'os, what did Hashem do? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One Blessed is He, do? Tzar klastar ponov shel Yitzchak, he fashioned the form of Isaac's face to resemble Avraham's, so that everyone would attest, Avraham holid es Yitzchak, it was Avraham who begat Yitzchak. And that's what is written here. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. For there is evidence that it was Avraham who begat Yitzchak. The sages see in this extra phrase, why is it there that Avraham begat Yitzchak? Because that's what people would say in response to the scoffers who would say, this is not Avraham's son. Why are you saying the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham? That's not how. The Torah then stresses, Avraham holid es Yitzchak. That's really what the people were saying, that Hashem made Yitzchak look so similar to remarkably similar to Avraham, that everyone would say this phrase, Avraham holid his Yitzchak. So the first interpretation, Rashi says, it's the Torah saying, Avraham holid. When did Avraham give birth to Yitzchak? After he was named Avraham. The second interpretation, Rashi says, based on the Medrash, is that this was as if the people were saying, Avraham holid his Yitzchak. We have evidence that it was indeed Avraham, because look at how similar, how eerily similar Yitzchak is to his father Avram. Clearly, this man's father is Avraham and not Avimelech. Okay, that's Rashi's comment on the verse. Let us flip to the Ramban, your blue sheets. Okay, the Ramban, I skipped the first page because it didn't add anything. He was just quoting Rashi. But on your first page of Ramban, it's on page 3, on the back side of the first page of your Ramban sheet. If you will see, it's the second paragraph, but it's tricky where it starts. It's 4 or 5 lines down in the Ramban Elucidated. Actually begins a new paragraph. It begins with the words Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra. Everybody see where I am? 5 lines in. So the Ramban, this is not his approach. He's quoting from the Ibn Ezra, Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra. He says further that the meaning of Holid, why does it say that Avraham begat Yitzchak, is it doesn't mean he begat, but rather he raised and brought up. The word holid can literally mean, so to speak, give birth or begot, but it has a broader meaning of to raise, to cause to grow up. So that the pasuk says, these are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Avraham raised Yitzchak. So that the verse is not simply repeating that Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak, which we would ask, we know that already. Saying something else. It's saying Yitzchak was raised in the lap of Avraham. That you need to know, and he brings as a proof, that the children of Yosef were raised on his knees. That it's a significant fact to say that not only did this father physically father this child, but that he was around and was able to raise him. And therefore, that's what the Torah is adding. So interpretation number 3 again, why do we have the extra phrase Avram Holid as Yitzchak? To give us a time reference. When was Yitzchak born? After his name was changed. A Midrashic interpretation Rashi quoted is that it was the people saying, look, it was indeed Avraham who gave birth to Yitzchak. And we have the Ibn Ezra, one of the early commentators quoted here in the Ramban, saying, no, it means to say that this whole concept that we're talking about, this, if you go back to all of the previous discussions we've had when Avram was still childless, and Hashem comes to him over and over again and says, I'm going to bless you, I'm going to make you great, you're going to be the father of a multitude of nations, and you and your children and your children's children are going to continue your message, the Torah then stresses and says, Avram didn't just have a child and then he dies or falls off of the out of the picture. Avraham holid es Yitzchak. Avraham was around to raise Yitzchak in his lap and to be the continuation of his mission, that he was there and he was present to transmit that from everything that Avraham had accomplished to Yitzchak. The phrase isn't extraneous. It's telling us that the continuum was there and that Yitzchak was raised on Avraham's lap. Okay, one more comment from the Ramban. We're going to skip his next comment. Go to page 4, if you will. The second paragraph, we'll do the fourth interpretation. Says the Ramban, now this is the Ramban's own opinion, meaning to say, so far we've had 2 from Rashi, 1 from the Ibn Ezra. Now the Ramban says, but this is what I think. This is why I think the Torah repeats the phrase Avraham holid es Yitzchak. Avraham begat Yitzchak. Says the Ramban, scripture mentions this again because it had said just above, these are the descendants of Yishmael, the son of Avraham. Right before this, literally prior in the same chapter, but just before the end, beginning of Parshas Toldos, the end of Chayisar, which we're going to read this week, the Torah gives a genealogy of Yishmael. Because as often does, when a person exits the scene, the Torah sums up their life, gives them their children, and then we're done with Yishmael. Now we moved on beyond Avram Yishmael. Now we're into Yitzchak and his children. So the Torah lists the genealogy of Yishmael, and it says, these are the descendants of Yishmael, the son of Avraham. Well, if we were to start Parshas Toldos, which is our story, just the very next chapter, the next paragraph in the Torah with, and these are the children of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham, it would sound like they're parallel, two parallel stories. Yishmael, the son of Avraham, and Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. We gave the genealogy of Yishmael, the son of Avraham. Now we're going to give the genealogy of Yitzchak, the son of Yishmael. Says the Ramban, that's son of Avraham. Says the Ramban, that's why I believe that the Torah repeats after saying these are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham, and Avraham begat Yitzchak. Why? Let's read it inside. So if here also it would have said only that these are the descendants of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham, without adding, and Avraham begat Yitzchak, it would thus be equating the two of them, both in their lineage and in their status. Especially since it mentions first the firstborn of Avraham, who is Yishmael. He was mentioned first at the end of the previous parsha. So you would say they're both the same, they're both equal, they both have a share in the lineage and heritage of Avraham. Furthermore, it would have been appropriate for the Torah to begin with Avraham and say, these are the descendants of Avraham, and then list Yishmael and then Yitzchak. But it did not want to do so, flip the page, so that it need not enumerate Yishmael and the sons of Keturah. Therefore, it went back to Avraham and completed its statement by saying, Avraham begat Yitzchak, to tell us that only Yitzchak and his offspring are considered Avraham's descendants. And it is considered as if Avraham had not begotten any other child, as it says, Ki bi Yitzchak yikarei lecha zera, through Yitzchak will your children be considered. Says the Ramban, that's what's being stressed here. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Avraham begat Yitzchak, as if to say, Avraham only begat Yitzchak. View it as if this is his only child, because from a spiritual perspective, it is. This is the only child that's going to continue his spiritual legacy. So when you think about the phrase, this is really the beauty of, when you look at the Mefarshim, the commentators of the Torah, and combined with Chazal, you see an extra phrase, Avraham begat Yitzchak. You say, why is that there? Look at the different angles from the simple phrase that you pick up on. This last comment of the Ramban says, why is that extra phrase there that Avraham begat Yitzchak? We know that already. It's to tell you it's an exclusion. He only begat Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the only spiritual heir that he has. Rashi says to tell you, when did he give birth to Yitzchak? When he was already only Avraham. Or the Ibn Ezra says, no, it doesn't mean he gave birth to him. It means raised him. It's to say that there was a spiritual continuity and that Avram was there to raise Yitzchak. And the Medrash comes and says, this is the people speaking. They're saying, look, they reject the scoffers of the generation and they say, it was clearly Avraham and not Avimelech who gave birth to Yitzchak. Four angles, if you remember when we spoke that first Monday night from the class, how you can look at something from so many different angles. You can hold up a book, you can hold up many pictures, and there are just so many different ways of looking at it. Here's a simple phrase, an extra phrase, so many different ways of looking at it and seeing something that the Torah is instructing us, is telling us, teaching us, just from that extra phrase. So far, so good? Let's move on. That's all, simply, the first pasuk. I have one more quick, we have a Hirsch, sorry. Very brief comment from Mefarsh on the first pasuk, but it's really a very good introduction to our next pasuk. Says Mefarsh on the first pasuk in your yellow sheets, when we consider how exactly the descent, the relationship, and origin of Rebekah is repeated in the next verse, this is why this is going to be a good introduction, because the very next verse we'll see in a minute is going to tell us that Yitzchak marries Rivka, and it tells us who Rivka is, the daughter of Bisuel, the sister of Lavan, who comes from the city of Padan Aram. So it's a very lengthy description as to who Rivka is. So says Rav Hirsch, so when you compare Yitzchak to Rivka, the Torah spends a lot of time describing who Rivka is and where she came from. So when you consider that, then the repetition of the short notice of Avraham Holid as Yitzchak, we have one simple extra phrase to tell us where Yitzchak comes from. that he comes from Avraham need not surprise us. He's not bothered so much by the question as the first four interpretations that we had. He's saying, well, when you compare it to the next verse, where we're going to have a lot of description of where Rivka comes from, so to say that Avraham is where Yitzchak comes from, when we already know that Rivka was the daughter of Lavan, we have this story already. But yet we go through her lineage, so if you go to the other side of the equation, give us Yitzchak lineage, it's not so surprising that the Torah goes out of its way to repeat it. One more line. And this difference in the lineage of the two parents can account for, be the deep lying cause of, all that follows. First is suggesting here a very, very novel approach. We are about to embark on a story that is going to be immensely perplexing, as we've already seen. We just read the first episode, as I said many times, there are three episodes between Yaakov and Esav, and it's a very complex story of these two twin brothers and the different directions that they go. Rav Hirsch writes, as we embark on this journey, uncovering these two different sons and the two different approaches, the Torah gives us where their parents came from. And it stresses, Yitzchak was begotten by Avraham. You ask, it's extraneous? It's not extraneous, because we're stressing, where did the father come from? Where did the tata come from? Avraham. The next verse, where did the mama come from? From Lavan. Sister of daughter of Bethuel and Lavan. And when you take these two diverse backgrounds, you're going to see different children, different traits, different characteristics manifest in the children. And Rav Hirsch is suggesting something very novel, and I would actually almost say controversial, to suggest that the lineage of the two parents are going to account for and be the deep-lying cause, as he writes, of all that follows. Not everyone would agree to this comment. Not every commentator throughout our history would say that, yes, we can attribute the evil veering off of the path of Esav to the fact that Rivka was descendant from Lavan and Bethuel. But Rav Hirsch suggests this, and he finds the hint in the Chumash in our extra phrase. Why does it have the extra phrase that Avram begot Yitzchak? To stress that, as opposed to the next verse, which goes through the whole lineage of Rivka, to stress where they were coming from, very different places, and as a precursor for what we're about to find in the differences between the two children that they're going to have. But in any case, that really presents us with five approaches to the extra phrase that Avram begot Yitzchak. This last approach being is coming to stress where Yitzchak came from as opposed to where Rivka came from. In other words, Avram begot Yitzchak as opposed to Avimelech, as opposed to when he was Avram, as opposed to Yishmael, or as opposed to where Rivka comes from, Yitzchak comes from Avram. So very, very interesting, all of the exclusions, what the Torah is stressing to us by adding that it was really Avraham who begot Yitzchak. So far, so good? Okay, so far we're enjoying this approach of seeing all the commentators at once, verse by verse.
Yeah.
So far, so good? Okay, let's do the next verse. Let's go on. Let's go on. Okay, verse 20. It's really our second verse. Vayitzchak ben Arba'im Shana. Yitzchak was 40 years old when he took Rivka, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean from Padan Aram, the sister of Lavan the Aramean, as a wife for himself. And as we've really just mentioned, the problems that we had in this verse are the repetition of who Rivka was, the stress of who she was, because the parsha before this is Parshas Chayesara, which we're about to, again, as I mentioned, read this week. And that entire parsha, almost in its entirety, is about the finding of the wife for Yitzchak, the story of Rivka, in which Eliezer goes and meets her father and meets her brother and has a whole conversation with them. We know very well who Rivka is by the time we get here, and yet the Torah stresses who she was. So that was our major problem, which we'll see. Rashi will address that in a moment. We pointed out when we went through this that the Torah tells us how old Yitzchak was when he gets married and does not tell us how old Rivka was. So that at the end of this first episode, when the Torah concludes on your verses sheet, the very last pasuk, of part one, in verse 26, after the boys are born, in verse 26, that Yitzchok was 60 years old when she gave birth to them. So the Torah gives us these references with, or through, I should say, Yitzchok, that he was 40 when they got married, and 60 when they had the twins. And we're not really told how old Rivka was at either stage. We're not told how old they were when they married. We're not told how old they were when they had, which might be just an irrelevant piece of information. We need to know that 20 years went by. So as long as we know from one of the spouses, we know that 20 years went by. It's irrelevant how old she was. But we noted that the Torah does it through Yitzchok and not through Rivka for whatever that's worth. Let's see Rashi. Says Rashi, verse 20, 40 years old, Yitzchak is 40 years old when they married. How do we know that, says Rashi? Because when Avram came back from Mount Moriah after the binding of Yitzchak, which we just read about last week, he was informed that Rebekah was born. If you look into the Psukim, there's a short little paragraph when Avraham returns from the binding of Yitzchak, and in that short little paragraph, we are told this lineage of who Rivka is, who Lavan is, and that she's born. So that it implies, Rashi says, that that's when she was born, that she was born following the episode of the binding of Yitzchak. Yitzchak was how old at that time? Yitzchak was 37. How do we know that Yitzchak was 37 at the time of the binding of Yitzchak? Because as soon as Avram comes back, what does he find? He finds a wife who has died. We know how old she was when she died because that's the name of our parasha this week, Chai Sarah. How old was Sarah when she dies? 127. Well, how old was Sarah when Yitzchak was born? She was 90. Avram was 100, and Sarah is 90. So Sarah's 90 when she's born, and she's 127 when she dies. And it appears that she dies immediately following the binding of Isaac. So then Isaac must have been 37 at the time of the binding of Yitzchak. So we now know that if we could put that all together, that Yitzchak was 37 at the time of the binding of Yitzchak. And from the time Yitzchak was born until the binding was 37 years, we just figured it out. And now Rashi goes through that, which we just did. For she was 90 years old when Yitzchak was born, and 127 when she died. Go to the top of the next page. And at that juncture, Rivka was born. Because that's what the pasuk says. After Avram comes back, it goes through that he was informed of the birth of Rivka. He waited for her 3 years until she would be halachically fit for relations. And then he marries her. So he's 40, so Rashi puts it all together. He was 37 at the time of the binding. He gets married at 40. She seems to have been born based on the psukim immediately following the Akedah. So if we take that as fact, as the facts of what we have, that the fact that the Torah says it right then means that's when she was born, she would have been 3 years old at the time of their marriage and 23 at the time that the twins are born. You'll look at me and you'll say, huh? Right? I see, Joe, you can't handle that. That's too much.
A promise marriage contract.
Yeah. So how do we, so this is one of those statements of Chazal, like the Maral has a lengthy explanation of what does that mean that she was 3 years old. You can come at it from several angles. You can come at it from the angle of she's just too young, she's a baby. You can come at it from the angle of, if you recall, the parsha before this, the story in which Eliezer, the servant of Avram, finds her, where does he find her? What's she doing?
Watering the camel.
Right, and he has a whole conversation with her, goes back to her dad, and he says, they want me to go. Yeah. So you can ask it from she just doesn't appear to be 3 years old, and if she is 3 years old, well then she's clearly, just based on the psukim alone, a very different three-year-old than the three-year-old that I have in my house right now. That's for sure. Going out to the well by herself, watering the flocks, there's no question that this is not your average three-year-old. The Maral even asks it from a halacha question. She's not old enough to get married for all sorts of halacha reasons. Gemara talks very negatively about marrying somebody so young. So how could Yitzchak have possibly married her from that age? It goes through that clearly what the sages are saying is something far different than that she was your average 3-year-old, whether or not physically she wasn't your average 3-year-old, spiritually, whatever it means. But even just from the story itself, the 3 years old that she was is clearly not the 3-year-old that we address. And for those of you again who were there at Rabbi Freeman's class last night, you would ask yourself, so then what are, does it make a halakhic difference? I'll ask the same question. Does it matter in an aspect of Jewish law whether or not she was 3, 13, or 23 in reading the story of Chumash? The answer is no. It doesn't make a difference. The story is going to be the same. So then why are the sages telling us, as Rashi is deriving this is based on one of the statements from the, why are they telling us that she's 3? Who cares? So that would be a question which is not for today. What's the significance of saying that, given that if she was a regular 3-year-old, it obviously doesn't make any sense. The story doesn't make sense. She's an obvious regular 3-year-old. So then what are we being told? What are we gaining from that? But that's not for today. We're going to leave that aside. So it could have been, if it wasn't the 3-year-old that we have today. It couldn't have been if she was the same 3-year-old as we have today. Okay, so you're almost giving an answer for what it is that the sages mean to tell us by saying that she was 3. I'm going to twist your words a little bit. I mean, this is what you meant to say. That what they're saying is that she was like a 3-year-old in the sense of the purity from the surroundings of her home. Maybe. We'll see. They're going to say something else about that in a second. But I'm going to leave it on the table. Rashi derives that she was 3. I want to stress one thing. What's the source? Where would be the one point to say where Rashi got his numbers from that is of interest in saying, how did you get it that she was 3? The main source of Rashi is that it's following the story of the binding of Yitzchak that Avraham is told that Rivka is born. If we assume, what Rashi's assuming, I should say, that the fact that he's told it then, and that the Chumash tells us about it then, means that she was actually first born then. If the fact that Avram was told about it then, but that she had been born prior to that, then she could be far older than 3. But with that assumption that Rashi's making, the Moral explains why Rashi does assume that, she would be 3, and that would leave us then just, whatever that means, clearly her involvement in the previous story of the drawing the water from the well, she's not your everyday 3-year-old. That's clear. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Now, who is this woman that Yitzchak, marries when he's 40? Rashi just went through how we figured out that she was 40. She's the daughter of Besuel, the sister of Lavan from Padan Aram. Asks Rashi the obvious question which we asked. Has it not yet been written that she is the daughter of Besuel and the sister of Lavan from Padan Aram? We know that the whole previous story told us that over and over again. Answers Rashi. These points are repeated here to tell of her praise, that she was the daughter of a wicked person. She was the sister of a wicked person, and her place was a place of wicked people. Yet she did not learn from their behavior. She did not learn from their deeds, nor copy their wicked actions. So that it's a praise, the Torah stressing. Why does it repeat again that she's the daughter of Besuel? And look, she didn't learn from him. And she's the sister of Lavan, and she didn't learn from him either. And she's from the place of Padan Aram, filled with wicked people, and she didn't learn from them either. So why is it stressed here? To teach us the praise of Rivka. Now, I want to share with you a Maharal. Maharal asks here, which you've quoted the Maharal, not this particular one, but many times. He asks, I don't understand. What character does she have that she didn't learn from her father? If you had to say, she didn't learn from her father, her father was a wicked person, and she didn't learn from him, she wasn't influencing him, what character trait has she displayed? Kindness. What else do you have?
Her mother's traits.
Well, her mother's also was just as wicked.
It's a trickery.
What has she displayed not to have learned from them?
Idols and bad behavior.
Okay, so what I'm looking for is, this is what I would have said. If she had an evil father and didn't learn from him, she's displayed the trait of, let's call it, I don't know, resolve or a clarity of what it is. That she had the ability to, courage maybe, not to be influenced by her father. However we'll define it. But she had a wicked father, and she held and maintained her own value system despite that. Would you agree to something like that?
Yeah.
So once I tell you her praise that she succeeded in not being influenced by her father, and then I say, and she had a wicked brother. So, that's the same thing. You told me her praise that she had a wicked father, and I now learned something. Oh, wow. Not only was she righteous, but she had a wicked father, and you're stressing it to tell me. Look at her resolve. Look at her courage. Look at her ability to stand them in the face of wickedness. She didn't learn from her dad. And she had a wicked brother. All right, you told me that. She did it to her father, so she'd be able to do it to her brother. And she had a wicked people in her town. So the moral asks, why does the Torah not only does it stress it that she had a wicked father, what do we gain by saying, not only did she have a wicked father, she had a wicked brother, and she came and she didn't learn from them. That's the same thing three times. Mm-hmm. Aaron says, very interesting insight. The moral says, we are influenced as human beings in three primary ways to behave. One comes from the concept or the element of fear. We are, out of fear of something, forced into a behavior. We might not be so acutely aware that's why we're behaving in a certain way, but if you would stop, think, break it down, you're concerned about something. I'm concerned about a punishment. I'm concerned about a consequence. I'm concerned something will happen to me, and as a result of that, I behave in a certain manner. Might be afraid of the government. Afraid of the police. Why don't I run red lights? I don't want to get caught. Is it that I love my fellow man driving on the other side of the street? No. If it were just for that, I would take the risk. But I'm afraid of the ticket. So my behavior is drawn by fear. Fear is represented, says Noral, by a parent. We are influenced to behave in a certain way out of the fear that we would have for a parent. To say that she was not influenced by her father, who was wicked, is to say, even when there'd be an element of doing what her father did, and there's an element of fear of not rebelling against her father, of wanting to do that which her father would want from her, no, she didn't follow after her father. There's another thing that drives us, and that is love. We're not afraid of a consequence, but we're after something. We like a certain person, and we do something like them because we want them to like us. Right? High school, I mean, that's all about. High school is a combination of fear of looking different and the desire to want to be liked by everybody. It's a constant, those two things. And we grow up and we sort of maintain that as we get into our communities. But the desire to be liked, or because you like someone, and therefore you copy what it is that they're doing, is also a very powerful drive that we human beings have. That's represented, says the Maral, by her brother. By brotherly love. There's a different kind of relationship between a sister and a brother than between a daughter and her father. Her father acted in a certain way, and if she were to have acted in that way, would have been because she's afraid of the consequences of going against him. And so you see a credit to her, a praise to her, that the Torah says she had a wicked father and she didn't behave that way. And then there's a different element of the praise when it says she had a wicked brother. And she also didn't follow after him. It's not just saying that she had even more resolve. It's saying she had a different kind of resolve. She had the resolve not to be influenced by someone who you would think she would follow after just because a younger sister always wants to do what her older brother is doing because he's so much cooler than her. And whatever he's doing, I want to do. And she also wasn't influenced by that draw. And there's a third strong influence on us, and that's what we call in Hebrew hergel. We're accustomed to certain things. We're just used to them. We just see it all around us. And when you just see something, you simply assume that it's normal. And you just continue that behavior. Why are you doing this? I don't know. Everybody's doing it. I didn't think about it. I wouldn't have thought not to do this. And you look around in any community, and there are numerous behaviors that everybody does. And if you would ask, why do you do that? I don't know. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, this is what everybody did. And this is what my parents did. And this is what my community did. So I'm doing it also. Whether it's being the way that we dress, in the way that we talk, in the societal norms, how we eat. Someone would say, you know, why do you set the table with the fork on the left side and the knife on the right side? I don't know. That's what they said is the right etiquette. That's what everybody else, that's what I do. So did you ever think about that? That maybe the fork should be... maybe. I'm making an example because maybe it makes more sense because you hold the fork in your left hand, so it does make more sense. But that's just a funny example of things that we do because everybody does and we do it too. So the Torah says Rivka comes from a town of wicked people, which means that the behavior, the way that people spoke, the way they behaved to each other, the norm was this is how we speak to people. We speak in harsh, condescending, nasty tones. And a person who grows up in that would simply think, it's normal. That's how you speak. So the Torah says her praise, not just to say she had a lot of resolve. She had a wicked father and a wicked brother and a wicked town. And saying the same thing three times, it's saying her praise in three different ways. She had the resolve not to act out of fear in a wicked way. She had the resolve not to be influenced out of love to want to mimic her brother, her older brother, and out of love, she didn't act in a wicked way. And she was mature enough to see that her community was acting in a certain way and to be able to say, wait a minute, that's not normal. Even though everything around her was telling her, it is normal. You should act this way just because. This is what everybody does here. And in her praise, the Torah says, no, she was a wicked father and a wicked brother and a wicked town, and she still maintained her righteousness. That's the model's explanation, a beautiful explanation, I think, of this statement from Rashi of pointing out that she was not impacted in all three of these ways that the Torah stresses. The Ramban has no comment on this pasuk. Let's go to Rav Hirsch and just read this quickly before we close for today. Yellow sheets, Rav Hirsch, page 20. It's funny, by the time we finish with this, you're going to be so Pavlonian dog trained to say yellow. Everyone's going to know Rav Hirsch is in. You're going to see yellow when I say Rav Hirsch. You're going to see blue when I say Ramban. Says the first in verse 20. Now, man, Rav Hirsch's opening comment was stressing the different backgrounds of Yitzchak and of Rivka. That Rivka came from such a wicked place.
Yes.
Now, Rashi just pointed out that despite that, she maintained her righteousness, which is why I said earlier, what Rav Hirsch is going to say now is going to be a little controversial, in which he's going to attribute the birth of Esav and his wickedness to her place of origin and her lineage. Even though she herself got out of it.
Yeah, we're talking genes here.
But that's right, but that's who she was, that's where she came from. Says Rav Hirsch, not for nothing are we told that Yitzchak was already 40 years old when he married Rivka. We asked the question, like, why is it relevant? It's on the back of the first page, verse 20.
Yeah.
Much as it was Avram's dearest wish and anxious worry that Yitzchak should get the right wife, he still waited till he was 40 years old, although at his advanced age he could not know how much longer he would live. Avram was willing to wait and to wait and to wait until the right person comes along. But just this delay would have arisen from the same cause, meaning Yitzchak's character was first to reach full virile independence and maturity so that he could be not only materially but also spiritually the whole support of his wife. Yitzchak could not have gotten married younger than this. He needed the time himself
to mature,
to be the next father of the Jewish people. So to be the father of the Jewish people is no simple task. And it's not something where you can like start off like so-so and you'll work your way into it. He needed to be that he had the time, says Rav Hirsch, to develop so that he could be the entire spiritual and material support of his wife. Now, why is he saying that? Because there's no one else other than Avraham who's providing the spiritual guide. Whoever Yitzchak will marry will not come from a home like the home of Avraham. Because there is no other home like the home of Avraham. So that Yitzchak will have to carry his wife as well on some level, because she will by definition have come from a non-Abrahamic upbringing. Hence, also the extremely young age which tradition ascribes to Rebecca. And our first right points out the Medrash, which Rashi quoted, which says she was 3. Says her first, whether or not it means literally, he says, it's significant. What are Chazal telling us that she was 3 years old? Which would also be indicated by the spelling of Nara. So that under the powerful influence of the Abrahamic spirits, she would all the more be likely to become a second Sarah. We asked the question, what do you mean she was 3? I mean, she's old enough to be with the flocks by herself. She's drawing water. She's clearly not your regular 3-year-old. What's the message? Young enough to be influenced by a Yitzchak that she could still then become another Sarah. We have already seen the striking difference between Rivka and her surroundings. Nevertheless, the Torah reminds us again of her Aramic descent and family, that she's also from Avram's extended family. Even if Yitzchak was Avram's son, and though Avram and Avram alone had influenced him, and although he had matured to a real son of Avraham, Rebecca, was still, in spite of her undeniable good qualities, the daughter of an Aramite, born and brought up in Aram, and the sister of the most pronounced Aramite, Lavan. If according to the experience of our sages that boys take after their maternal uncles, and he quotes here a statement from Chazal, Rov banim holchem achar achi ha'em, if you want to know what a child is going to be like, look at the child's mother's brothers. Because the influence that they had from their home is the influence that the mother had from her home. And it's the mother's influence that will most strongly come out in the child. So Chazal say, if you want to know what a child is going to be like, look to his mother's brothers. Says Rav Hirsch, quoting from that, so Chazal understand that that's a significant statement. Rivka came from a home of wickedness. And while she broke from that, she maintained from her father's wickedness, her brother's wickedness, her town's wickedness, what children could be expected to come from this marriage if most of them would become replicas of their uncle Lavan. Thus we are prepared beforehand for the discord which arose later on. We cannot be surprised that an Esav also appears, and can only wonder at finding Yaakov next to him. Very fascinating statement. Strong, powerful, broad strokes you need to make this statement. That because Rivka came from that, and the Torah stresses to us, Yitzchak had to wait to be 40 years old to fully mature spiritually. The sages tell us Rivka was but a baby to tell us, certainly on a spiritual sense, young enough to be influenced by a Yitzchak and by an Avram to become like a Sarah. But because she came from such wickedness, one can expect that there will be a impurity, so to speak, in the children. And it's almost as much of a surprise to find a Yaakov as it is that we find an Esav. Most people, I'll use people broadly, would say, when you look at Yaakov and Esav and you say, which one is surprising? They would say, Esav is surprising, the son of a Yitzchak and the son of a Rivka. Where do you get an Esav from? Rav Hirsch is almost flipping that on its head, saying, how do you get a Yaakov out of someone descended from such wickedness from which Rivka came? Very fascinating. It's slightly controversial just because of the fact that it's so different from what I think most people would look at it and say. But what he's answering is, A, why the Torah stresses the lineage of Rivka, with which he answered a fifth explanation, which we started the day with, why does the Torah stress the lineage of Avram begat Yitzchak, to stress Yitzchak was straight from Avraham, as opposed to Rivka, who's coming from a very different source of a background. And to explain, refers us to foreshadow the two children that we're going to see. Keep this in mind as we continue to go through, because we're now going to get through the pregnancy and the difficulty and the prophecy. And this idea of the two children from two backgrounds, coming from two worlds, this is the theme of this entire story, which we're going to be spending a lot of time on, all these different episodes of Yaakov and Esav. And we already see in the beginning various threads that the commentators see as to how we end up with these two very different divergent children.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.